Welcome back to Talking Golf with Anne Liguori on this Sunday morning and the final Talking Golf show of the season. And, with the Ryder Cup at Bethpage Black just a few weeks away, my attention continues to focus on this mega international competition. And we bring in Hank Gola, author of Ryder Cup Rivals, The Fiercest Battles for Golf's Holy Grail, to share some historical perspective. Hey, Hank, welcome to Talking Golf.
Oh, thank you, Anne. Always good to get up this early in the morning. I only do this to make tea times and for you.
I believe that. And Hank is also the fearless leader of our Met Golf Writers Association. He's our president and a former sports writer, as you know, for both the New York Post and the Daily News, although not at the same time.
Never. No, that could never happen.
All right. Well, before we talk about your book, Hank, and Ryder Cup history, let's talk about Keegan Bradley's six captains picks last Wednesday. Just the fact that he did not pick himself as one of the six. I mean, were you surprised by that?
Yeah, because he was laying the groundwork, it seemed. He got Luke to agree to have the vice captains talk to the players, and it just seemed like he was getting ready to pick himself. And look, the guy is definitely one of the 12 best American players right now, and he's coming off a pretty good FedEx Cup. So it did surprise me a little bit, but then again, Keegan's been full of surprises before.
He certainly is. And, I think it was a wise choice. Although early in the going, I thought he would pick himself. And then as I really started thinking about it after the tour championship, it hit me that, obviously he can fully focus on being the Ryder Cup captain. And as you know, going through the history of these Ryder Cups, it is just such an all-encompassing job. And it would have added so much intense pressure and scrutiny, I think. What if he lost a match, man? He'd never hear the end of it, right?
Yeah, true. I was thinking the way he would have done it was to play himself only once a day, basically in one session on the first 2 days, and then of course in the singles. But play himself early, maybe in the first one or two matches, and then get out there and do his captain stuff. And the same thing on Sunday in the singles. But again, that's putting himself right in half the day, especially on the singles. I don't think it would have been as much of a problem on the first 2 days as it would have been on singles day, especially if, everything comes down to that final day. So, yeah, in retrospect, I think he made the right call. But again, I'm a little surprised. It just seemed like he was headed in that direction.
Yeah, it was really. But then I think these guys kind of stepped up, especially toward the end of the season, Sam Burns and Patrick Cantlay, and obviously Ben Griffin had a great season.
Yeah, Cam Young, too. Cam Young finished strong, too.
I was surprised about Colin Morikawa, although he does have so much Ryder Cup experience. I just don't think, there were just so many other candidates who played better than Morikawa.
Yeah, I agree with that. And that's the one guy I would have taken if Keegan had put himself on. That's the one guy you could see coming off the roster.
But, looking back at the Ryder Cups, that you have covered, and I know I've covered every Ryder Cup. I can't believe this since what, 1999. And so I want to talk about that for a second. That battle at Brookline was
Yeah.
just very, very special for many, many reasons. And from a media perspective, they didn't have one of those huge media tents. I remember being in a room at the Country Club of Brookline. It was a lot smaller. The Ryder Cup wasn't as huge
No.
back then. And what are your memories of that one?
Yeah, well, of 99,
Yeah.
my memory was kneeling inside the ropes directly online with Justin Leonard's putt
Oh
on
my goodness.
17. And next to me was Tom Lehman's wife. And as soon as that putt fell, she came charging onto the green like Usain Bolt out of the blocks. I mean, she was really out of, and it's my theory that she started the whole stampede and ended up trampling over Jose Maria's line. But that's I have a vivid memory of that. And of course, Crenshaw and his wagging finger. The interesting thing about that Ryder Cup is, Mark James and all of the UK, all of Europe, was highly critical of the U.S. fan behavior and even the U.S. player behavior on the 17th green. It was tough. It's Boston fans, right? And I mean, they were all over Monty in particular. He had a rough time there,
I remember
and Payne
that.
Stewart actually had to step in and calm down the crowd. But it was always my contention that what he should have done with his team is taken him to Fenway Park and put him in the bleachers while the Yankees were in town, and say, "This is what you're going to have in store for you.
Good
This is
point.
these aren't the staid Augusta patrons who are going to be clapping everything, applauding everything you do. This is a different deal." So I thought that. And again, also that particular Ryder Cup, he didn't play his three rookies the entire time until singles day, and then he stacked them up like dominoes on Sunday. He had them 3, 4, 5, and ended up putting them up against Phil Mickelson, Davis Love, and Tiger Woods. And after Lehman and Hal Sutton won those first two matches, there was a 5-match sweep. And you know, Ann, how momentum goes there. Once you see one color going up on the board time and time again, it affects the rest of the matches because it puts a lot of pressure on the team that's losing these matches, and it just picks up the team that's winning them. So I blame Mark James a lot for that loss, and of course I was happy to see Ben, and he's so into the mysticism and the
Sure.
sacredness of golf. He afterwards he was certain that there were fate was at play, and Francis we met was up there helping him.
Yeah, he's all about fate. In fact, I wrote about that in my book, Life on the Green. But I'll never forget, that speech. I'm going to leave you all with one thought as he
Yeah.
pointed his finger at everybody. I'm a big believer in fate. I have a good feeling about this. That's all I'm going to tell you. How dramatic, right?
Yeah, it's exactly what you actually quoted him verbatim. That's very good. And but again, I think at that point he had seen the U.S. European lineup, and I think he took that back to his team room and said, "Look what we could do here, guys. This is possible. We could sweep these first five, and let's go off and running from there."
Well, I was in the media room watching it on the monitor because doing updates on WFAN every 20 minutes, I can't be on the golf course. I have to watch the whole thing. But
Right.
man, you had the front row seat right on that 17th green when Justin Leonard drained that 45 footer for birdie. And I just remember the media room just erupting in pandemonium, and I could hear the
Yeah.
roars from outside. So that
Well, you
was.
know, Ann, if you've been in those media rooms along with me, and they're split in half. You've got the European press on one side and the American press on the other side. And the European press is much more enthusiastic about their team than we are. We are trained no cheering in the press box. That goes back to Red Smith and beyond him. But the Euros have no problem. Once every time a blue dot goes up there, the entire side of the Euros erupts, and they love their team. I think half the American press is rooting against the Americans sometimes.
Yeah, that's wow. Well, that's another story. But and then another most memorable Ryder Cup for me, and it wasn't perhaps because of the play, but the 2014 Ryder Cup at Gleneagles in Scotland, when Phil
Yeah.
Mickelson threw U.S. Ryder Cup captain Tom Watson under the bus. I'll never forget that. And it was your question that started that whole
That's
thing.
right. It was my question. I feel like I'm a small part of Ryder Cup history. They were getting their rear ends handed to them every time we went over there. And it was like the same scene. Euros are celebrating, champagne everywhere. Everybody's dancing, ole, ole, ole. And the American team has to come trudging into the interview room and sit on a big stage side by side. It almost looks like the Last Supper. And my question was, anyone who was at Valhalla in 2008, what went right then and what's gone wrong since? And Phil, I think he was just waiting for something like that, and he pounced on it. And Tom Watson just sitting there staring straight ahead as if he's like lining up a putt or something. His eyes didn't move, and he listened to it all. And of course, that led to the formation of the task force and a change in how they picked the team and other things around the team as well.
I was squirming listening to
Yeah.
Phil. And, back then, yeah, you had the Ryder, the European team that had won. in the same room, as you say, it looked like the Last Supper. But I mean, I couldn't believe it. And then I'm looking at Tom Watson, and I have to tell you, I was impressed. He pretty much maintained his composure
Oh, he did.
while everybody else was squirming.
Oh, yeah. And if you remember, well, with me, when you ask Phil a question, he locks eyes with the questioner. And he looks you through, and he's answering your question. Well, I wanted to look at the rest of the team and see what their reaction was. But, I had to look straight at Phil as he's answering my question. So I had to go back and look at the videotape for that one. But they also came back to Furyk. Remember one of the British guys, British
That's right.
writers said, Jim, what do you think? He didn't know what to
He
say.
just
He
took
said,
himself
thanks a
out of
lot, or
it.
something like that.
Well, then let's talk about the meltdown in Medina, 2012. Europeans rallied from 4 points down in the singles. You know what I remember about that? A lot about that. But Rory McIlroy barely made his tee time. Remember that?
Of course I do, yeah.
He
He was playing in the
overslept.
second match of the day against Keegan Bradley.
Yeah, he overslept. He got the time zone wrong
Yeah,
because it
he
was
mixed up his
central
time zones.
time, and he
And I
needed
think
a
his
police
manager called him in.
escort. He needed a police escort to get there on time, and it was arranged by his then girlfriend, now his wife, who organized that whole thing.
Yeah, well, what happened was the chief of police of whatever city it was out there, where the European team was staying, happened to be at the in the lobby for some reason, not for just for any reason, just stop by or something to see how things were going when this whole thing was unfolded. And they were trying to figure out, well, how is he going to get there? It is traffic and all of this, and you're going to need some sort of police escort to get him there on time. And it was luck that this guy was there, and they were able to put him in a squad car and get him to the golf course. I think 5 minutes later, if they had gotten 2 holes into the match, he would have had to forfeit the match. And they got there. The first match was already getting off, so Rory had no time to do anything else but put on his shoes and go out there and hit driver off the first tee. And he ended up beating Keegan. And of course, Keegan had a great Ryder Cup that year, teamed with Phil. You remember they were just blowing through matches and getting the crowd hepped up and each other hepped up. I think it was Amy said, that they were getting jealous of their relationship.
The
It was
bro, the
really a
bro love, the
bromance.
bromance.
And then Davis Love, the captain, did not play them in the final session. And Phil was claiming that they were mentally exhausted and they couldn't go on. And I'm thinking, mentally exhausted? They didn't play a match past the 14th hole, and they're playing alternate shot. I mean, they're taking half their shots in two of those matches. So I remember when I was covering the PGA at Kiowa that year, I was walking along with Mark Bradley, and we were following Keegan around. We were just talking. And he said to me, you know who Keegan would really love to play with at the Ryder Cup? And I said, well, who's that? He said, well, Tiger. He'd love to get Tiger juiced up because the Americans always had a problem finding the right partner for Tiger. Tiger did fine in the singles, but not so much with a partner. And Keegan thought that he could really get Tiger going. And of course, Tiger did not have a good Ryder Cup that year with Steve Stricker. And I was thinking, well, look, if Phil's so mentally exhausted that he can't get through another match, why don't you just take Keegan and sit Steve Stricker and let Keegan and Tiger go? And who knows what happens? Maybe he does get them juiced. And that, in hindsight, might have stopped all that momentum that the Euros got in that last session, Ian Poulter playing the hero, and prevented what ended up happening on Sunday.
You mentioned Phil Mickelson, and I'd love for you to talk about the impact of LIV on the Ryder Cup regarding Phil.
Well, Phil was, I mean, he would have been the captain in 2024. It would have been Phil and Henrik Stenson, both of whom ended up in LIV. And of course, there would have been great significance to that because of their duel at the Open Championship a few years ago. As much as it's exciting to have Keegan, it would have been so good to have Phil. Phil has. No other golfer has captured New Yorkers like Phil. I mean, Phil may be a goofy guy from California, but for some reason, New Yorkers have always taken to him. He's
Sure, I mean, he
always
got
around
labeled the
here.
people's champion.
Yeah, exactly. And it was like that was set in stone. That was so obvious, a no-brainer that Phil would be the captain at Bethpage. He even mentioned it, in the years before Liv, that how he'd love to do that. And man, that would have been great. It's too bad. I mean, what has happened has happened, but I think it took a lot of took out a lot of a lot out of this Ryder Cup.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. You think if Liv didn't happen, Phil Mickelson would have been the captain of this 2025
Oh,
U.S. Ryder Cup
absolutely.
team.
Not even a question. And of course, and Stenson had already been named the captain for 2025. And,
2023, 2023, I think. Stenson.
that's right. Right.
Yeah.
That's right. He would have been, yeah, he was captain 2023 and
Right,
everything.
right.
For
Well,
Liv.
finally, Hank, because we're running out of time. I can't believe how fast this went.
Yeah.
Talk about what you think the historical significance of this upcoming Ryder Cup of Bethpage will be.
Well, it's going to be on the grandest scale stage ever in a Ryder Cup. Most Ryder Cups aren't played. Aren't this the golf course usually isn't the story at Ryder Cups. It's the competition. In fact, if you look at where these Ryder Cups have played, they're usually not played at great golf courses, with the exception of the Country Club in Boston and Medina, and then Royal Birkdale over there. They're just kind of mundane. There's nothing about Bethpage that's mundane. It's a grand scale. It's going to be filled with people, and it's a big, big golf course that's going to put a premium on driving, which is unusual also for a Ryder Cup. And it's a biggie. It's played in America, in one of the world's biggest cities, America's biggest city, and I think it's going to be loud and boisterous and whatever else we expect. The only problem is I at $750 a ticket, I don't know how many strap hangers are going to be getting through the gates.
But they will
But
have passion and they're very knowledgeable. A lot of people don't give New Yorkers credit. You know, everybody says, oh, they're loud and rude. And they are very knowledgeable sports fans and golf fans for sure.
yeah, for certain, for certain. And you know what? It's comparable to Boston fans, right? And we saw what happened at the Country Club, and I think this is going to turn the meter even higher.
Well, the book is called Ryder Cup Rivals, The Fiercest Battles for Golf's Holy Grail. I love what Gary Van Sickle, former SI golf writer, wrote on the cover. If you don't get goosebumps reading this book, check your pulse. You may be dead.
Thank you, Gary.
Anyway,
Appreciate
Hank,
that.
thank you so much. You know, for all of us, appreciating the rich history of the Ryder Cup will definitely, you know, get us all even more excited for the upcoming Ryder Cup of Bethpage. My thanks to Hank Gola, to Amelie Fung and Alexa Fung, and to Brian Rescona in the studio. Well, that's the season, folks. It has been a great season of talking golf with guests including Ernie Els, Gary Player, Hal Sutton, Rafael Campos, Joe Highsmith, Michelle Wee, Don Ray, Andy Bassett, and Nathan Groob from Travelers, Joe Theismann, David Cohn, Dan Rappaport, Mega Gane, and legendary Rush guitarist Alex Lifeson, to name a few of my guests this season, with shows about golfing in Ireland and from the majors, including the Masters, the US Open, the Open Championship at Royal Portrush, covering the PGA Tour, the LPGA Tour, the PGA Tour's champions, and amateur golf. And I also would love to thank all the producers who worked on this show this season, Brian, Ed Arzuman, Rami Levy, and my thanks to David Majornik, Lou DiPietro, Tommy Izzo, Ryan Hurley, and Chris Oliviero. Keep in touch, everybody. Follow me on social media. Enjoy football season. And thanks so much for your support and for listening to Talking Golf with Anne Liguori.